You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's live talk. I'm your host, Michelle Gasseau. Today we will be speaking with Judith Green, Senior Policy Analyst for Justice Strategies, and Adrian Moore, Executive Director of Reason Public Policy Institute, about prison privatization costs and potential savings for corrections departments. Green is an independent criminal justice policy analyst with expertise on private prisons, sentencing, and corrections policy. Previously, she was a Soros Senior Justice Fellow, has served as a research associate for the RAND Corporation, and was Director of Court Programs at the Vera Institute of Justice. She has served as a Senior Research Associate for Families Against Mandatory Minimums, the Justice Policy Institute, and the Drug Policy Alliance. She has provided legislative testimony on sentencing and corrections policy in several states and presented papers for professional and policy organizations, including the National Institute of Justice and the National Institute of Corrections. Our second guest, Adrian Moore, oversees research for the Reason Public Policy Institute, the research division of the nonprofit Reason Foundation. That research includes a focus on issues pertaining to education and child welfare, transportation, urban land use and economic development, environmental quality, and privatization. His own research focuses on privatization, government reform, and infrastructure. In addition, he has worked with several state and local government commissions on policy issues. Moore also graduated with a master's in history from California State University, Chico, and received a master's in economics from the University of California, Irvine. He also holds a PhD in economics from the University of California, Irvine. Today, they will discuss prison privatization and whether or not it represents a cost savings to corrections departments. Welcome, both of you, to today's live talk.
Thank you, Michelle. Glad to be here.
Well, we're very glad to have you both. Adrian, I'm going to have you answer our first question, which is, what would you say are the greatest benefits of prison privatization and maybe some of the biggest pitfalls?
Well, the biggest benefit is, like in most other aspects of our day-to-day lives and of the world out there, competition is a force for good. It's something that makes innovation, it makes customer service, in sort of retail, in all of our walks of life, it leads us to strive to do things harder and better, and it lets us have choices. It's very similar in most government services, and prisons included. Privatizing some prisons creates an opportunity to change the way things are done, to try new things, to look for ways to improve, and to put pressure on a system that otherwise would just continue to do things the way it has always been done and never really try to improve things. The biggest drawback is, like with any change process, you've got to have an accountability mechanism. And it's easy for people to sort of ignore that part of the equation and simply look at the change itself as the outcome and not look at the accountability as what you're really, really trying to get. And you can see that all the time when something bad happens in a public prison. The vast majority of people just shrug and move on and don't particularly care. When it happens in a private prison, a lot more people care because there's something different about that. And so the corollary to that is, you've got to have an accountability mechanism. When government decides to have a private company do something so crucial to people's lives, like control their day-to-day life inside of a prison, you got to make sure you have accountability mechanisms, and not all the governments have been very good at establishing that.
Judy, what are your thoughts about benefits and pitfalls?
Well, I'm on the side that really doesn't see a lot of great benefits. Coming at this as a policy analyst as well as a person, concerned with human rights abuses, I think that the biggest pitfalls with privatization fall into two categories. I'd say the practical and the political. On the practical side, my years of study of private prisons, comparing with public prisons, indicates that the impact of privatization has been largely corrosive up close and personal these benefits that sound very good and theoretically come from competition look more like cutting corners in a race to the bottom. I remember interviewing, for example, a top-level prison manager in a southern state who, when I asked her what kind of innovations she had picked up in the public sector from the private prisons in her state, she laughed and she said that the department had learned that if they cut the budget for underwear, prisoner families would send money so that their loved ones could buy underwear at the commissary. In more structural terms and looking system-wide, I think we need to realize that too many prisons, public and private, are substandard in terms of delivery of medical and mental health care, program services, basic education, vocational training, substance abuse treatment, those things that really help prisoners break the cycle of crime and give them the potential for returning to their families and communities as more stable and law-abiding people. Too often, cutting costs means lowering standards in these areas, not raising them. So I don't see competition as a plus in this picture. On the political side, I guess I'm concerned about the way that privatization debate tends to sort of hijack important public policy debates at the state level about the size and structure or the purpose of our correctional system. I've seen in state after state how opportunities for healthy legislative debate about sentencing policies, particularly for handling low-level nonviolent drug offenders, the public by and large want to see those folks in treatment. And debates about putting them in community treatment alternatives tend to evaporate when, lobbyists show up for the private prison corporation. We saw this in Oklahoma in the mid-90s, where a broad sentencing reform measure was basically defeated after CCA came in and started building prisons on spec in the prison. We're seeing it in Arizona, where a lot of talk about sentencing policy prior to the legislative session has kind of evaporated while they're debating whether to build private prisons in Mexico. In Alabama, again, their sentencing commission reform package before the legislature, but there's some private prison company building in Perry County, and you can see how that's sort of undermining the need for legislators to think more rationally about how they want to spend their correctional dollars.
Adrian, you have a response to that?
Well, I think the first thing Judy pointed out, that privatization of prisons has clearly improved performance most of the time. It's helped systems get out from under court order. It's specifically improved conditions of confinement in many cases. Has it never failed? No. I mean, sometimes things have gone wrong. But in general, they've been a process for improving conditions. And they've certainly been a means of cutting costs, which is an important issue. There's a lot of underfunding of things in the prison system, and so the more we spend on just the raw confinement process, the less we have for things like medical care. But the lobbying issue, I think, is crucial as well. To say that sentencing reform was undermined by prison privatization seems pretty amazing to me when you consider that the private prison spending on lobbying nationwide is nowhere near the spending by the public prison unions in any one state. I mean, the pressure to not change the system and not change sentencing and not expand the system comes far more from the public sector than from the private sector.
Judy, my next question is to start with you, and maybe kind of gets at some of the issues here where the debate is formed, but has enough been done to really look at how quality factors into prison privatization? And would you say that this is largely considered by departments or agencies that go to privatization, or is cost and cost savings more the reason for going to privatization?
Well, again, I watch the legislative debate where the actual decisions get made, and I'm not I wouldn't say that either cost or quality is the biggest factor. I think during the 90s, during our boom years of prison expansion, before 2000, the most frequent reason for privatization cited was the need for flexibility, the need to expand the correctional system to handle what was then a massive problem of prison overcrowding. these days I think that the decision is primarily a political one. It's certainly true that unions do lobby for expanded correctional facilities, but by and large I think privatization comes into the picture by reason of a certain political ideology, their anti-government, anti-union perspective. It certainly doesn't hurt that these corporations are able not only to make political contributions, but to employ the best lobbyists money can buy. And when they build on spec, as they have in many states, and in particular I'm thinking of Oklahoma, the existence of empty beds ready to go online is a very powerful incentive for legislators to make their decisions in that direction. In terms of what the debate looks like on quality, I don't know that the empirical evidence runs in favor of the industry. On the contrary, I'd say it runs against them. I directed a quality performance evaluation to the University of Minnesota a few years ago, looking at a private prison run by CCA in that state, comparing it with public prisons in Minnesota, and found pretty much across the board lower standards, poorer quality in terms of program deficiencies, unreliable classification methods, high rates of staff turnover, resulting in sort of inadequate levels of experience and well-trained personnel. I could set you more detail, but one that I think stands out is that education programs in the private facility, when a prisoner was assigned to school, they went 3 hours a day, whereas in the public prison, their school assignment was full time, and that paid off in one objective outcome measure I was able to capture. The rate of the GED attainment in the public sector was more than one-third higher than at the private prisons.
Adrian, I suspect you have a different thought on how quality factors into privatization decisions.
Well, I would agree that we don't know nearly enough about it. And your original question was, you know, is quality sufficiently factored in? And I would say absolutely not. There hasn't been enough research about it, and there's not enough emphasis put on it in the decision-making process. So I'm actually a big fan of the kind of prison privatization contracts they're doing in Australia and England, where it's an explicit part of the contract that here's a bunch of measures of how good a job you do in terms of the quality of the prison and the quality of the programs, the quality of the management, et cetera, et cetera. And you get paid more the better you do on those things. You get paid less the worse you do on those things. We don't have anything like that to speak of in the United States, and that just seems ridiculous to me. Because for the most part, as Judy pointed out, the politicians don't care about that. And until they do care, they're not going to demand that from the public system or the private system. But given what we do know, Judy is correct about the outcome of her study. I will point out that that's the only study on quality, comparing private and public quality, that found those kind of results. There's only a few others, but the others all found better quality in the private prisons. And that's a function of the decisions that are made by the government, because in the private prison that Judy looked at, the government was still paying the piper, and it was paying for, they were getting the educational programs that they were willing to pay for. They're getting the health programs they're willing to pay for. If they want more education, they could choose to pay more for more, but they chose not to as part of that deal, whereas in the public system that she compared, they chose to invest more in education. Well, that's not a public-private difference. That's two different sets of elected officials making two different decisions about what matters.
Judy, do you have some thoughts on that?
Well, Adrian's certainly correct that there are other studies that have found different findings. But I think that now that we have a couple of results from national surveys, I'm thinking one in particular done for the U.S. Department of Justice, that compared public and private performance across the board, there were some rather disturbing findings on the performance issue where I think it's fair to say the rubber meets the road in correctional services, facility safety. Jim Austin, in his study for BJA, found a 49% higher rate of assaults on staff in private prisons and two-thirds more inmate-on-inmate assaults in private facilities. Structurally, comparing the industry with our state-level public system, and those findings are highly disturbing.
If you're just joining us, a note to our audience, we're talking with Judith Green of Justice Strategies and Adrian Moore of the Reason Foundation about prison privatization cost savings. Kind of wanted to get back to what we were just talking about with comparing public and private prisons, and many complain that a true comparison really isn't able to be done, that there is no true apples-to-apples comparison, and I'm wondering if there isn't one that's able to be done. How can a corrections agency really make an informed choice about whether or not prison privatization is the best thing for them or not?
Well, there's two parts to your question. There is, can we do apples to apples, and then can we make an informed decision? And the answer is no and yes. Not only can we not do apples to apples, because we don't want to do apples to apples comparisons. When you go shopping for a car and you're trying to decide between a Toyota 4Runner and a Ford Taurus, the only thing those two vehicles have in common is they both have two rows of seats and they both have four wheels. That's pretty much it. There's, you know, one's an SUV, one's a four-door sedan. They're completely different. Can we make a rational decision about which car we decide to buy? Heck yes. We can do that in all kinds of things. We can actually make decisions about whether to buy apples or buy oranges. They're both fruit, but they're not the same thing, but can we make good decisions? Yes. Because if there was no difference between public and private prisons, why on earth would we privatize? There would be literally no difference. There must, in fact, be a difference for it to be worth doing the change in the first place. So the question is, can we understand the differences and evaluate the pros and cons and make decisions based on those? And I think that's undoubtedly true. Judy talked, that's the last question, about her study. Those two prisons were not identical. They were similar enough that her comparison was very valid. It didn't have to be apples to apples. It just had to be a reasonable comparison where you could evaluate trade-offs and performance. And that's all the public sector needs. But they have to care about that, and they have to invest in it. I'll go back again to the things we don't do in the U.S. that they do in, say, England and Australia, for example, is they systematically do these kind of comparisons as a government entity. Very few states have invested in trying to do this kind of comparison here in the United States. They certainly don't go back after the fact and say, hey, let's evaluate whether our decision to privatize these two prisons resulted in what we expected and how have things changed in our public prisons as a result. We hardly ever do that. Whereas in England, for example, they do that systematically, independently, and you have tons of good analysis, and they've had much better results because of it.
Judy, what are your thoughts about the kinds of comparisons that are being done and what a corrections agency ought to consider?
Well, there has been, speaking of similar facilities, pretty close to an apples-to-apples comparison at the federal level because the Federal Bureau of Prisons contracted for a private prison out west at the same time as they were building three prisons that they operate themselves on the same footprint, and so were able, and at the same time, and so they were able to compare the private prison with the three prisons they were operating, and they're still looking at those prisons, and there's still research reports that haven't come out, but preliminary reports showed that no particular cost savings. As a matter of fact, one preliminary report showed that the private prison was actually operating a higher cost. Look by the research unit, a close look at performance measures, found higher levels of disturbances, escapes, drug use by prisoners in the private prison compared to the three equal footprint apples that they were operating. And basically, they drew the conclusion that this had to do with the greenness of the workforce on the private side. I mean, when you're talking about saving money by cutting costs, corrections is an industry that where most costs are in personnel. And that means either assigning fewer people or it means paying the people you assign less. And there is, I think Adrian would agree, a structural turnover problem in our private prison sector. Consistently, year after year, with turnover rates some 2 to 3 times that in the public sector. And corrections is a public service that pretty well depends for internal security as well as public safety on having good, well-trained, experienced people walking the tiers and managing the prison.
Adrian, that's an interesting point about corrections staff, and it's one that other folks have made. What are your thoughts about how the staff may be part of that could be, considered as, when privatization decisions are made?
Yeah, it is part of the equation. I mean, I actually think that the example, kind of proves my point. Here was a case where the Bureau of Prisons had a private prison and then its own prisons all coming online about the same time and designed for an explicit head-to-head comparison. And what they did, according to the BOP itself, was require the private prison to do everything exactly the same way the BOP runs its own prison. I mean, I'm talking down to what toilet paper they order.
Hmm.
So what do you know? There was no difference to speak of in terms of cost because literally they could do nothing differently. I mean, you can get apples to apples that way, and what you have is a meaningless comparison. The only thing that was left for the company to do, the only place they had any ability to change things was they couldn't be told how senior the employees would be. And so it was a great manifestation of that employment problem. That is a problem that the private sector faces, and one of the challenges that they have to overcome is how to deal with a different set of personnel, or how to improve the personnel they have so that they can be deliver the results that they're asked of them.
You know, it sounds like there's still a lot of sort of questions out there and some things that maybe need to be improved, maybe about privatization of prisons. And Judy, maybe you can answer this question for us next. But what do you think might be the future of prison privatization here in the United States?
Well, I think certainly we're stuck with it, given the level in which some states, like New Mexico, Colorado, Oklahoma, have invested so much of their correctional capital on the private side that, they couldn't back out if they wanted to. I remember in New Mexico in 1999, where they had a rash of deadly violence in two private prisons in that state, five deaths over a period of some 9 months. And they really couldn't remove their prisoners. They've got upwards of, I think, 40% of the correctional population in private prisons in that state. They would have nowhere to put them. So they were forced, essentially, to increase the contract to the contractor in order to pay for some basic services and amenities that the contractor said they couldn't afford to provide with what the state was paying them. I think the years of high growth expansion of privatization at the state level are over. Correctional managers and many public policy makers, I think, have learned the lesson of what you get when you pay less, you get less, and the challenges which unfortunately our state system is just not up to in terms of, as Adrian was talking about, really carefully monitoring and enforcing contracts. I mean, we just don't have in most states the development of that muscle that you see in Australia and the UK, although I must say that does not mean that they don't have problems with privatization in those countries. I think, the bottom line here is that there isn't any large body of evidence that convinces us that privatization is saving a lot of taxpayer dollars. Future growth, I think, is, and of course the industry analysts agree, that future growth is largely dependent on the federal government. If Congress decides to actually fund the tripling of the immigration detention capacity that they just authorized a few weeks ago, that certainly is expected to be a bonanza for the private industry, but it's also being eyed closely, I think, by a lot of local jails and even some state prison systems where population has been declining and they've got some empty prison beds and may want to put them on the market competing with the private sector. And I think that goes to the most fundamental issue here, back to what I said about how the debate about privatization, will we have new private beds, will we have new public beds, or how will we operate our prisons, tends to block out more fundamental questions about What are we using our prisons for? Who should be in them? What kind of people might be in correctional alternatives in the community? And if you look at the track record in a few states, New York, Ohio come to mind, where states have really been seriously pursuing sentencing and parole reforms, enjoying reduced crime rates while they do that, they're basically downsizing their prison systems, and the kind of cost savings that you might wring by privatization in a system like that are just dwarfed by the kind of money being saved. Ohio, for example, has been able, through sentencing and parole reforms, to bring their population down and close to prisons in the last 2 years. They're saving something in the neighborhood of $65 million per annum. That's, I think, where policymakers should be looking as they eye the future and try to grapple with their limited budget dollars.
Adrian, given that prison privatization is probably not going to go away anytime soon, what do you think is the future of...
Well, I mean, we are in 100% agreement on sentencing reform. I'll say that, you know, that's where the most important piece of the future is. But I don't think that we should stop investing in reforms or changes in the prison system that will improve the system that isn't going to go away in order to increase the pressure for sentencing reform. I think it's the wrong strategy for creating pressure for sentencing reform. So both parts really matter. And privatization is not a panacea. It's not an ideologically inherently good thing. It is a tool. It's a policy tool. And like any tool, if you use it well, you're going to get good results. If you use it indifferently, you're going to get random results. And if you use it poorly, you're going to get lousy results. And so I think we've got a tool. We've been kind of fumbling around, not really always using it right. And so there's a lot of benefit to be had from improving the way we use the tool with the kind of things we've been talking about, performance-based contracts and so forth. And let's start, if we're not sure about the quality that we're getting, let's make the payment contingent upon the quality, and then we'll start to get the quality we want, just like we do in every other thing we purchase in life. If you don't pay for it, if it's not good, then you start to get good things. Fix that aspect, and then absolutely we've got to do sentencing reform. It's just ridiculous that we're continuing to expand our prison system based on growth in nonviolent drug offenders. It's just ridiculous. That whole part of the system should be reformed out of corrections, and the corrections element should get much smaller and much leaner and more efficient. I think privatization will help us do that. Both pieces together are going to give us a much better picture 20 years from now in terms of how we handle punishment for crime in this country compared to what we've done for the last 50.
Judy, can sentencing and privatization live together?
Well, there are a couple of small private prisons in Ohio, and I think they've not played a role one way or the other in terms of the correctional decisions that have been made in that state, however, because they didn't exist back in 1996 when the state instituted a broad-scale revision of their sentencing laws. I think that the main issue, I'll go back to what I've said a couple of times before, which is that the way privatization comes into the debate and sort of switches the focus so that we're no longer talking about what do we need in order to operate a humane and safe correctional system, what do we need in order to be able to assure that prisoners who are released can go back to their communities and live, you know, law-abiding and tax-paying lives. Those debates just get short-circuited in states where the private sector is pushing because, you know, more privatization means more prisons.
Well, interesting discussion today. Thank you very much to both of you for deciding to join us today, and that concludes today's live talk. Thank you also for our audience for tuning in as well. For more information about prison privatization savings and costs, be sure to read this week's articles on the Corrections Connection at www.corrections.com. For CCNN, I'm Michelle Gasso.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.